Welcome to Day Zero Update for July 28th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week, but we've got plenty of news to talk about.
Including a crap ton of labor-related news, believe it or not.
And we actually have some good news to end on this week versus the typical bad news of layoffs and such, though we still have some of that stuff. But we got some good stuff on the other side. But before we get to the news here, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I have started Clock. That is on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. It's on Game Pass as well. This is a new game from the team that has worked on a bunch of different stuff, indie stuff over the years. I'm trying to Hollow Pawns, which let me see what the other games. I Am Dead, Wilmot's Warehouse, Loot Rascals. The art behind it is Richard Hogg, I believe, who has done a bunch of different stuff there as an artist. And kind of a very specific style of art that is pretty easy to see. Because he also worked on Hohokam and Frobisher Says and some stuff like that. So it's some really good resume there. But Flock itself is kind of a bit different from their usual stuff, as it's kind of a creature cataloging game, essentially, as you're exploring this area that is beset by clouds that kind of cause a lot of potential. They just kind of cover large parts of the ground in this area, and kind of like a high tide, low tide kind of setup that is pretty interesting initially. And you kind of, as you go, you open up more areas to explore, and you're finding more creatures. And the story is that you're kind of brought in to by your aunt to help out with stuff, and the main thing they settle that she settles with you settles onto you is the notion of filling out this catalog of all the creatures in the area. And there are like 9 different groups of creatures, types of creatures, and you get also like 4 or 5 of each to find. You start with a few initially available in the immediate area before things start opening up, and it's generally tries to present that stuff in somewhat of a realistic way, where you're coming upon this creature and it shows you like here's the different here's the group it's in, the type of creatures, and then you get to pick from descriptions of the 4 or 5 different types in that group of like, here's the notable characteristics. So which of these do you think it is? And it's not necessarily penalizing you in any way. If you mess it up, it'll generally give you at least an extra try to figure it out, which for the most part, I figured out at least 2 that it could be. Usually the one it was just like, that's not quite what this is, but that's probably this other one that I thought it could also be, kind of thing. So you're kind of filling out this catalog along the way, and if the creature you find is a member of one of the groups that you've found something in before, they ask you to figure out which group it is. Which there's a couple that are like, these all look basically the same, but you claim there's a difference. So I mess it up all the time. There's no real penalty in any of that stuff. But along the way, you're kind of riding on your bird friend who is helping you fly around. You don't really have to control it in any sort of technical way. It handles the sort of vertical aspect of the landscape on its own. You're just pointing in a direction, deciding where to go, and it'll go up hills and whatnot if you need to. You also have a bunch of loops and different kinds of little things you can go into for little tricks by just hitting the the right trigger to kind of do a speed boost into it that will get you around the area pretty quickly. Though one of my issues, kind of just the it's tough to manage things with the map, because one of the big early things is that the whistles that you have to attract these creatures to you get stolen by these thieving birds. Mm-hmm. They all go hide in these hills that you have to use sheep to eat all the grass, and then what's left is the creature itself that has stolen something. Mm-hmm. So you kind of pull it out, and then you find out, like, oh, is there a whistle here, or is it, you know, something else? Usually it's something else, but you do get some whistles on occasion, because the name of the game is Flock, and that's because you can sort of recruit these creatures to hanging out with you, following you as you go around. And so I've been trying to get, you know, you generally want at least one of each. And you're, one of the things you can find in those holes is the something that on, you know, upgrades how many of those creatures you can have hanging out with you. And so you can really enough have it like automatically. You don't get to dismiss any, but you can like lock them in. And it also has options for, like, we want variety. So if you pick up a new creature, it'll just get rid of a duplicate if you have it, because you'll probably have that early on when it's asking you to kind of fill out your flock right away. So you'll see probably one or two different types, a bunch. So you'll probably have some duplicates early on. But as you go, you're kind of tasked with a lot of that stuff. But yeah, it's kind of a big open world to explore and kind of find these creatures and look for. You're mainly listening for new creatures to find, because you usually hear calls and such from them to go find them, and you're trying to figure out like how to catch them or catalog them, that kind of stuff, because some of them are easily startled and all that. So yeah, it's a very nice chill exploration game with some good visuals and music and all that to it. So definitely one to check out if you like a game with not many real stakes to it. Though it is weird that every time you find a new creature, your aunt is like, well, it's not going to fill out if you don't go find more of them. And it's like weirdly hostile a lot of the time. It's like, calm down, lady. We'll do it in due time. Yeah, the only other things you find, some of our research students that are on these emergency perches, which is weird because they can just kind of hang around there for a nearly infinite amount of time. So, yeah. But yeah, it's one of those kind of games. It's pretty cool. Been enjoying that. The other game I've been playing that's new here is Arranger. I believe the full title is Arranger, a role puzzling adventure. It is from a new studio called Furniture and Mattress, made up of some notable names. Nick Suttner does a lot of the writing and all that on it. He's worked on a number of indie games, doing a lot of writing stuff, from like Guacamelee to Blood Roots and Harto and a bunch of other games. But he also used to be at 1UP and was part of the PlayStation group that was recruiting new indies and third-party games to their platform. A bunch of that kind of stuff. The other notable member is David Hellman, who's the artist behind Braid, which means that this game has some really great art to it. You get a lot of little comic style scenes that pop up to help you give a little extra flavor to the story from time to time, that kind of stuff. So that's pretty apparent if you've played Braid at all, and you see this and you're like, oh, this definitely is the same person that's done the art for both, just a good 10-12 years difference, more experience in that. So but yeah, the core gameplay here is that of a tile sliding game, tile sliding puzzle game. Which can be frustrating in just its pure sense, but here it's a lot more opened up, where if you go to the edge of a, you know, area, and you just hang out there, you'll see the edges kind of like show a little flare to them. the show. Like if you keep going, you know, to the left side, you'll pop to the right side, and kind of keep going that way. If you're keep going to the left, same with up and down and all that. And so it early on shows you the notion of getting around obstacles that are covered in what they call static, which keeps them in place. And so they'll throw tricky stuff of, you know, objects that you can't push up against them because it's, you know, you're not going to be able to move with that. But you're trying to figure out like, oh, I can go around the edge on this and come out the other side in an open space, that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of that kind of stuff to it. And the combat is similar where you're not, you know, directly attacking anybody. You're taking a sword that is on a tile and you're moving it around to hit an enemy's head kind of thing. So nothing really too complicated, but can be challenging trying to figure out the solutions to some of these puzzles. And I think I've beaten two bosses so far that were both pretty cool uses of that mechanic. One was sort of a like a worm type of a scenario that you kind of moved out to extend how long the body was and essentially tried to move it around to take the spike filled end of the tail to hit the head for the one boss. And the other one was kind of using some new equipment you get, which are you get like a raft essentially to get across water. And at some point you get two rafts. So you're kind of moving that around in specific ways to get both of those rafts to use them as like a bridge or something like this. And that involved another mechanic where you have almost like a joystick that was controlling these creatures that used to move around and control them and try to cover these buttons that made the boss available to hit. And, you know, in classic kind of Zelda style, it's three hits to a boss to kill him, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's got some Zelda flair to it. With the dungeons and such you're going through, though they're not, you know, explicitly Zelda style with you getting items out of it. You're generally not carrying anything with you, though there are some occasions where it's like early on you meet an old guy who's like, oh, I don't want to walk anymore. You just essentially drag him with the tiles, just drag him. It's like, oh, I could get used to this kind of thing. He likes to say so. They play some fun stuff there. Story wise, you're playing as this character who was dropped off at this place called The Hold when she was a baby by her mom, and sort of has grown up and wants to go back out into the world, but the people that live in The Hold are very distrustful of the world outside. I think that's, you know, even going out is akin to a death sentence for yourself. But she does not believe so, and they're kind of letting her decide if she wants to leave or not. But yeah, in the process of dealing with that first boss, you end up destroying a hole in the wall that kind of opens up your path to get out. And they're all very much not happy because they're like, oh no, we're going to be in danger. And I don't think that's happening, but where I'm at right now is I've kind of reached a base of operations essentially, where some of the people I've met previously in some of these areas has kind of gathered to help me in my quest to figure out whatever's going on. But yeah, it's a very good game. Very nice use of these mechanics. Some very, very good level and puzzle design to help you get around. I've done some fun like side dungeon stuff. One involving this weird creepy zookeeper guy where you're trying to essentially match up two creatures that are, you know, supposedly going to fuck. So, you know, and he's very much a creeper kind of hanging out on the side while you're doing all this work to figure out how to get them to wherever you need them to go. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to playing some more of this. It's been really fun so far. And yeah, it's on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC, I believe, PlayStation, Switch, and PC for $20 with like a 10% launch discount. So I definitely recommend checking it out. That's really great art, great, really great music, and a very good game if you're into puzzles. So I've done one actual slide puzzle So far, that was part of a temple, which wasn't too hard once I figured out how I was supposed to do all of that, but it actually blocks you from teleporting from the sides, any of that kind of stuff. So, but, yeah, that game's very cool. And the last one I've been playing is College Football 25. Mainly playing my Road to Glory character, who's a quarterback at Northwestern. I finished up my first season of starting, where I led my team to a winning record, won a bowl game, but we were only 7-6. But that's mainly because I started, I got the starting job after the first two games, which were lost by the previous guy. So I did pretty well. Going to the second season, or technically my third season, the way that the coach kind of handles the depth chart, my guy got essentially benched for another quarterback who had higher stats than me, to which I got into one position battle to remain at the second string quarterback position, and was, I basically had more coach trust, which is generally how they determine when position battles are going to happen, but that doesn't seem to matter for the AI players, because I was well above where the starter was at, and it still didn't give it to me during the first game of the season that week. I had to wait till that first game was over with, and then I got the quarterback battle popped up for the next week, so I missed one game this time, which kind of just sucks. It seems like there should be some better logic there for who they want to go with, especially like MLB The Show has, actual scenes of meeting with coaches to discuss that kind of stuff, and this doesn't have anything like that, so you're kind of just at the whim of the way the numbers are run in any of this. Which has definitely become a more notable issue, where I've played, I think, 5 or 6 games so far in my third season as a sophomore. And I've definitely had moments where we hit third down, I ran a play, didn't get the first, but would have been close enough to potentially go for it on fourth down. And then it just tossed me out to the sim to simulate, what's next, and I go back and... during the game, you can look up a list of the plays that are run, and I found that they had run a fourth down play going for it and got the, I think, did not get the first down, whatever it was, but definitely my quarterback ran a fourth down play during the sim, which I was not allowed to control, which seems like that should not be happening. That's anything involving your player should be played by the player, but not... not the way that this game seems to be running with some of that logic. I've had one game where we were essentially tied. I was going down the field trying to score at the end, got it to like 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter. We were in the goal line, so a few yards left to score or kick a field goal or whatever. They pulled me on third down, so I was like, oh, they're gonna kick it. It's like, okay, whatever. They did not kick a field goal. They seemed to just simulate going for it, but did not get any points, and went to overtime. The other team got a field goal, which then gives my team a chance to score a touchdown and win, or get a field goal to keep going in overtime. And I managed to throw a touchdown and win it anyway. And it's like, this is some really dumb logic that the AI is. I don't think it's anything you can adjust in any way. It's all just the way that they're... their simulation logic is supposed to work and not doing a great job of making at least reasonable decisions, especially when games are on the line. It's pretty frustrating to see, especially where I'm at now. I have maxed out the amount of coaches trust points that they allow you to earn, where I'm at over 30,000 points, essentially, which means every time I go to that screen, I see the meter kind of fill up, and my player's little portrait there just goes off the screen until I decide to leave that screen. So there's nothing really else to learn, and I'm still technically have like 2 more years of potentially playing. Mm. So it's like, this isn't designed too well for people to play an extended period of time, I guess, or not. Or to play in such a way that I'm not losing tons of that trust, even though mm-hmm. you know, I make mistakes from time to time, but I'm able to kind of negate that from those issues, mm-hmm. which is just a little bit weird. It feels like it wasn't balanced properly. I'm giving you these points, and what you unlock with them is not really anything all that useful.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, you get a chance if the play that the coach has picked mm-hmm. is not agreeable to you. You can hit the Y button to essentially say, like, give me two more plays. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's like, oh, these are just two more running plays when we need to pass because we're at 3rd and 10. We need to get 10 yards. Not mm-hmm. running plays are not necessarily going to get you that, but the only way you can kind of get around that is if you foresee that stuff and just do run a hurry up play, mm-hmm. essentially skips the play picking process, and you get to essentially audible into one of a handful of different plays, mm-hmm. But you never get the ability to audible on your own during a play. Mm-hmm. If you notice that, like, maybe this play isn't going to work out, maybe mm-hmm. you should audible to something else, but you don't ever get that. Which I believe is something that in NCAA Football 14 you would get. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is just some stuff that's, you know, the result of them, you know, starting from scratch after, you know, not working on any of these games for 11 years. But it's also stuff that sticks out when for anybody that has played that previous game mm-hmm. recently and knows, like, all the features it had, and that this new game kind of falls short in some of those ways.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough to make it a bad game or anything, but to make it more flawed and more feeling like it's unfinished, less than polished as you would want when they've mm-hmm. been working on this game for at least a handful of years now since they decided they were going to bring it back. So yeah, it's still a lot of fun to do everything here, but I definitely think there's a lot of rough spots to that you have to deal with in that process, and hopefully I think they have said they're going to be releasing an update sometime here in the next month or so, probably fix a lot of issues that people have. So hopefully that is the case, but for now, kind of just having to deal with it, and it's kind of just a thing that kind of sours the enjoyment a little bit. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I finished Trails Through Daybreak, and that game ended on just the best note. It doesn't end on a cliffhanger, but it does end in a way that, you know, it wraps up the story for this particular game, but it leaves enough open that it's like you can get an idea of, like, where the sequel is going to be headed. And it was really great. It was amazing right up to the end. And I think this might be the first, like, of the Trails games to, like, get a very major coverage in all the gaming press. So there's, like, a whole sort of new group of players that are being introduced to this enormous franchise for the first time. And honestly, if there was a game to be introduced to it, this would definitely be a good one, because it's starting off a brand new story arc. And, you know, the game comes with, like, a sort of story so far thing where you can find out what the backstory of all the other games are. So if you don't want to have to go through all the other games, which, not to say they're bad, they're definitely good, but some of them can be a little more slow going compared to the modern ones. You can just look at that and you'll get, like, oh yeah, so that's what happened.
It's like if you felt like you had to play the other Final Fantasy games to play 16.
You don't have to play the other games to play 16. It's like they're all
saying it, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's all these other games and lots of hours to get through.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, now I'm ready for 16. It's like,
yeah,
maybe you could skip some of the arcs and come back later.
Yeah, definitely. Especially with the Trails games, because there's a lot of them. And they're all more or less related with each other and build off of each other. But because, you know, Daybreak takes place entirely in a part of the continent that we have not at all seen any of, it's basically like starting from scratch. So, yeah. So great game. Highly recommend it. I've also been playing Travis Strikes Back, which is one of the No More Heroes games. They recently put it in No More Heroes 3 on the on PS Extra. So you can play both of these games. The sort of No More Heroes games, they're a Suda 51 joint. So if you've ever played one of his games, you know sort of what you're into. They're a little off kilter, and they're all like they're not as heavy on the new movie references as like Kojima, but they do have like the aesthetic of a guy who loves like, you know, grindhouse movies. And it's also unique because Travis Strikes Back is unusual in that it sort of welds together the canon of like a bunch of his games into the No More Heroes universe. There's characters showing up from like Killer 7, from Killer is Dead. I think there's one guy from Shadows of the Damned even shows up. But basically, the whole thing with No More Heroes is the guy, you're playing this guy named Travis Touchdown, who's like a poor otaku who manages to get a hold of what he calls a quote unquote laser katana off of like this weird auction site. And he decides he wants to become the number one. And what does he want to become number one in? He wants to become the number one assassin in the world. And so he ends up deciding to challenge all the assassins on this list on this weird, like, dark web page. And that's, like, more or less the story of the mainline games. Travis Strikes Back is specifically about him exploring this possessed game console. That he is trying to get what they call the 6 death balls, which are, you know, like essentially like games for the console. But because the console, when you use it, you get essentially like virtual reality embellished in it. Basically the story is he's trying to get all 6 of them because he thinks that if he can get all 6 of the death balls and beat the games in them, he can get any wish granted. So it's kind of like a Dragon Ball type thing. And the game is essentially divided up between the time he spends inside the console, you know, going through the different games, and the other one is spent on this sort of visual novel format where it tells you the story of how he managed to get all of these death balls in the first place. And you sort of divide your time between one and the other. After you beat one of the games, you then have to go to the other and then sort of find out how he got the next death ball, and then you get a new one, and back and forth, and that's more or less the pattern. It's pretty fun, very enjoyable. I will say that the combat portion can be a little repetitive, because it's sort of like a top-down hack and slash type thing, but it's still pretty enjoyable, I think. And on top of that, I've also decided to go back and start going into the Apollo Justice DLC that was in the Apollo Justice trilogy that I skipped over. Those are definitely a little off kilter compared to the other ones. One of them is about a murder that happens in an aquarium, and the orca, the killer whale that they keep at the aquarium, is the main suspect. And so you're trying to find a way to be able to get the case to go to court so that the orca doesn't have to be put down. And the other one is about this woman who's convinced that she's a time traveler, and she is accused of killing the guy who she believes was the person who was going to murder her in the future. Also extremely bizarre. And Larry Butts comes back out of nowhere for that one. That's what I've been playing.
All right. So, yeah, let's get to some news, though. Before I want to get to that, we'll talk about one thing. The Xbox 360 Marketplace shuts down on Monday here.
Yep.
I did a couple streams showing off some of the games that are going to be left behind, as well as just some of the weird quirks of an Xbox 360 at this point. Which at like some points the avatar that I had got reset a couple times, so it just kept seeing this like generic version on the dashboard, and a couple of weird things on the storefront. I might have the link for this still, but there's a page for the, I think it's the Legend of Spyro game that's on the 360. And the screenshots are all fucked up.
Yeah.
And not like they had uploaded poorly. Like there's duplicates in the, I think all of them have, generally have like 10 screenshots in it. And you can see like some of these are multiples of the same screenshot. Just one has like some weird glitch on it that they still kept on there for some reason. All that kind of weird stuff to it. But yeah, just the frustration of trying to figure out, like, is this on sale? Is this price not the normal price or whatever? So there's a lot of little weird stuff like this. Yeah, here's the link I'll give you. Just gotta run through the Xbox stuff on the URL before you can see how just weird these screenshots are on this page. These are all the ones that show up on the games page itself, and it's like just real. And yeah, the notion of dealing with like the DLC for games, because it's, you know, DLC also goes down, as well as gamer picks and themes and all that kind of stuff. And also running through a few games that have been delisted, so like the way that those game pages look, there's like, here's, you know, information about the game, here's like a description page, leaderboards for one stat, achievements and screenshots and DLC and some of that stuff. Delisted stuff like just has a, may not even have all of that, just might see like a, you know, a play button and a delete button kind of thing. So it's like, yeah, I see why they're shutting it down. It seems like it's not, it's kind of falling apart, its ability to deal with all this stuff, all these details it's trying to collect. So yeah, kind of weird, but yeah, still going to be a good bit of games that kind of will be lost to time, essentially. There's a Burnout game on there called Burnout Crash that never released outside of the PSN and XBLA, the Steam version or anything. And it's like, it's still a pretty fun game.
Yeah.
Also a weird one to try to stream, because it's, you can mute the music, but there's special events that happen and they play licensed music during those. Like hearing Salt and Peppa's Push It and that kind of stuff. You're like, oh, okay. Well, through this stream, trying to get it up without any copyright issues. But there's that. There's like Exit, you know, those games. Those were PSP games that only got console releases on XBLA. No, you know, PC versions or anything. So yeah, it's an unfortunate thing. There's a lot of people trying to get DLC and some other stuff. I purchased a handful of things through there, and yeah, I think I'm mostly done. But yeah, it's a shame, but hey, there's maybe something good will come out of this. Who knows? But yeah. So yeah, that's the end of the Xbox 360 marketplace. So yeah, but yeah, let's get to some news.
All right,
We got some stuff you can check out now. Like, there is a demo for Rise of the Ronin, so that if you have not picked up that game but want to see what the new Team Ninja game is like, this will let you play through, I believe, the first chapter of the game.
Yep.
And they show some player choices that people have made and sort of how people generally went, and I believe these are events you experience in the first chapter, so maybe weirdly spoilers for that stuff, but okay. And yeah, some options for romances and personal bonds and all that kind of stuff here if you're interested in it, but also maybe don't look at that stuff. Just you can check out the demo. The progress transfers over to the full game if you get it at some point. But it's a definitely recommend checking out the demo, because that is a cool game. And it's not just like Ghost of Tsushima. It's much more of a big kind of open world to explore, and some more unique ways. Your character gets access to a number of things that makes getting around in a somewhat unrealistic way, but nevertheless, like, fun ways to get around. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go. Also available now is Valorant on consoles, PS5 mm-hmm. and Xbox Series X and S. The game has gone into open beta,
mm-hmm.
So that you can now just play it.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, I noticed it was listed as a Game Pass game on Xbox, which seemed weird because it allowed you to install it through Game Pass, though I just also clicked on it and clicked buy for free because I'd rather just make sure it's owned and not just installed like as a temporary license for whatever reason. But yeah, that's the Riot Games sort of mix of Overwatch and Counter-Strike, essentially. Mm-hmm. Maybe more of an anime vibe to it than the way that Overwatch kind of goes more classic, like, 90s cartoon kind of vibe. But yeah, a very popular game. So now lots of people can check it out and play against each other. So there you go. With that, let's see. Also available now, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 on Game Pass. If you have the storage space. And it's a hell of a process to download this, because if you do not remember, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 was developed as DLC for Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. And so it essentially merges into the launcher for Modern Warfare 2. So at least on the Xbox, when you try to start a download, it's like, hey, what shit do you want in this thing? What should we download? And there's a bunch of it labeled as Modern Warfare 2, which you should not download if you don't have it in some way. But yeah, then it also asks, like, what do you want to download first? And I just let it all download it either way. I wasn't going to sit here and be like, well, it's downloaded what should be the multiplayer. I'm going to go play that. I played, like, one match because it took me a while to figure out how to get into a match, the specific kind of match I wanted. Because if you're not careful, it'll throw you into a lot of objective-based matches, like capture the flag or capture points, that kind of stuff. I just wanted to shoot people. I think the first time I played any real multiplayer in a Call of Duty game since maybe original Modern Warfare. I rented that and was like, played the campaign and played some multiplayer. I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. And just never did touch any of it again. But yeah, you can play Modern Warfare 3, the campaign, multiplayer. It'll also offer to install Warzone if you want to. Weird thing is they have a bunch of licensed skins in the game. I think like Fortnite, it just rotates in and out. But right now, I believe they have Rhea Ripley, WWE's Rhea Ripley, in there as either part of the Battle Pass for the season or something you can buy. I don't know. Cheech and Marin? Cheech and Chong were available in there, and they're very weird because they're not characters that would shoot people, really. Outside of, like, accidental stuff, but they're very much voiced like they're, you know, contract killers. They have Snoop Dogg in there again, but in dog form. That looks like if you've ever heard of Humanimals.
Yeah.
It looks like that. Which is to say it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a lot of weird shit in there. And the Cheech and Chong stuff, like, there's a thing you can equip that essentially turns people, like, the bodies of the people you kill into blunts. Like, okay, I guess this is what Call of Duty is now. Make it as nonsense as possible. So, yeah. You have Game Pass, you can check that out, or Game Pass Ultimate. Regular Game Pass, you'd be able to play the campaign, I guess, but not much else.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, campaigns in Call of Duty have been kind of a periphery for a while now, so,
yeah. I think the one for Modern Warfare 3 was kind of a lot more just, here's some areas where some stuff happens. And you can kind of do that for a bit until you've completed all the objectives versus like a actual campaign, because that thing came in hot.
You
had to make choices, but Yeah, there you go. Definitely do not buy skins because they're not going to transfer over to Black Ops 6. It's the shitty thing that happens with Call of Duty is all the licensed characters that people purchase are stuck with the last game. They did a nice thing, at least, in that Modern Warfare 2 skins you bought transferred over to 3, but that's also because it's just DLC for it, technically, the way it's all handled. But keep that going on a ongoing basis, it seems like. So I think Warzone's the only place where that stuff can kind of transfer over from game to game, but that's also loosely tied into each game, so it's not really all that much of a part of it. But there you go. You can play some Call of Duty and see if you want to buy it or check out the next game. Although I think they should be having that beta starting in a few weeks, I think. So yeah, there you go. But let's see what else here. We got some dates. Shadows of the Damned, a Hella remastered, finally has a date of Halloween, October 31st.
Yeah.
So perfect time for that.
Oh, yeah. And I played the original, and the original is a lot of fun. Legitimately, it's a very fun game, and it's got amazing art direction. But it is also incredibly juvenile. I cannot deny that at all.
Yeah. But yeah, this let's see, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. It'll be $25, which seems pretty reasonable. For what that is. Let's see, all new features like New Game Plus mode, 4K resolution support, more costumes that'll come with it. So, all right, that's cool. Yeah, that's kind of almost like Shinji Mikami and Goichi Suda making like a Resident Evil 4 ass game that does not take itself serious at all. Especially with the main character kind of talking about his gun like it's his dick. So,
yeah. Yep.
That's the kind of level of humor you got there.
Yep.
But yeah, there you go. We got another date here, a delay for Stalker 2, Heart of Chernobyl. It was supposed to be out September 5th, right before Astrobot. Unfortunately, has been delayed to November 20th to give them some more time to work on some technical issues with the game. But in the process, they released a little dev diary thing. So if you want to see some behind-the-scenes stuff, with the game, you can check that out. Or no, they are going to release it, let's see, August 12th. So that'll be in about 2 weeks in collaboration with Xbox, since that's their major partner for the game. So yeah, they should take the time they have, make sure this game is as good as it can be. So now that'll be a late holiday game. So there you go.
All right.
So yeah, there's that. That's it for the dates. We got some games that have been announced. One here from Team 17 and developer Sassy Chap Games called Date Everything, in which you date everything. I believe it's supposed to have at least 100 dateable characters.
Yep.
I believe like objects that can turn into dates. Yeah, because you get a gift. Let's see. Your BFA in customer service unfortunately goes to waste as you lose your job to AI, but a mysterious stranger sends a gift, magical glasses called Dateviators, which make your house come alive and dateable. Each dateable object will open up, have their own stories, and potentially become your lovers, friends, or enemies. An exhaustive who's who of voice actors keeping you company on your journey. This is a studio made up of voice actors, developers, let's see, Ray Chase, Robbie Damond, Max Middleman, and Amanda Hufford are the four that are mentioned here as part of the team. So yeah, they've been working on this, gonna be coming to everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. No date yet, but that looks fun. Silly kind of a dating visual novel thing.
Yeah, it looks entertaining, I'll give it that.
So yeah, there you go. Something to keep an eye on. Probably will be out next year, I would assume. Let's see. Also, this game got announced from former EA devs. A game called The Run got next.
Yep.
A little bit of a weird game, but a name. But it's made from people trying to recreate the NBA Street style of basketball game.
Cool.
Yeah, so 3-on-3 street basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
Turning into more of a roguelike to it, so you can have more randomly generated campaigns, essentially. You have core conditions, strategic modifiers, and drop impacting every game, and new players coming in to stop your streak to keep your every run unique. So, but yeah, it does not seem like it'll be featuring real players, just a bunch of, original characters. Essentially, they feature three here in the announcement they made. But yeah, it looks like it'll be coming to PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC in 2025. So, yeah, hopefully be able to check it out next year. Cool to see. It's a style basketball game we really haven't gotten in a long time. Outside of a couple of attempts at some general arcade basketball games, like the NBA 2K Playground game, I think it was. That was all right. It's more of a means of getting people to pay for microtransactions than anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, that's it for the game news. Then we got developer and publisher news. Here, Warner Brothers Games has acquired Player First Games, the makers of Multiverses. They have not disclosed the price of the sale. But yeah, they will continue to operate under its current leadership of co-founders, of their current co-founders. So that's good for the developers, because that game seems like it has not taken off in any way, but seems to not have done poorly enough that they are going to shut them down. But being Warner Brothers, that could still happen at any point. When they decide that they've had enough of this game. But they are getting more aggressive with the characters that they're adding to the game.
Yeah.
As they put like Samurai Jack in there. I think they announced some stuff at Evo, like Beetlejuice, Joker, Agent Smith, Jason Voorhees. So they're adding more characters there. Yeah, from what I've heard, the changeover from the original engine to Unreal Engine 5 kind of makes it controlled differently in a way that has alienated some people. Because if there's one genre of fans that don't like changes, it's people that make Smash Brothers clones.
Oh, yeah.
they like them to play a specific way, and if that changes in any way, you're hearing no end of it. But yeah, at least that's good for the developer for the time being. And let's see, publisher news. Ubisoft decided to issue a very weird statement about the Assassin's Creed Shadows controversies, mainly addressing it to their Japanese community, which is weird.
It's bizarre because outside of a handful of like really loud people, there wasn't really a controversy.
From what I've read, the main issues that like Japanese people have been having is just weird design of areas where it's like they put quarry gates at the entrance of a town for because it looks cool and not because that's how it worked. Those I think were more to like temples and such. It's like a lot of like that stuff where you're like, if you're supposed to be realistic in any way, this this stuff doesn't make any sense. That Japanese people would definitely be more knowing of that stuff versus the West in general. But also the right wing parties in Japan have seized on the Asuke stuff and all that to try to create a shitstorm for this game. So I think that's partly why they're addressing this to the Japanese community. But also they could have just not done this and basically said, like, we try to make games that are, you know, paying homage to the eras and the countries that they are set in, but also not adhering to, say, 100% realism in the design for that stuff. But, you know, just making this very weird statement that did not solve anybody's issues.
It
just seemed like they just stepped in a big pile of shit, and now they're trying to figure out how to deal with the shit. It's like, yeah, Asuka generally has not been an issue for normal people.
No.
People who aren't just going into this in bad faith.
Yeah, and going into it trying to specifically, you know, going into it specifically trying to cause a shitstorm.
Yeah. Because again, it's not like he's the only character. We also have Naoe, who's a shinobi.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's a big cell phone for a company that did not need to do this. So
no.
But yeah, let's see here. At the time of the issue, the group's canon chief contacted Ubisoft. Flag used by Sekigahara Teppokutai, an infantryman reenactment group. Publisher had not sought permission to use it. They responded by removing the piece of art from its site and apologizing. That group was still not happy, given their flag will also appear in the game's collector's edition art book. Mm. And it's too late for Ubisoft to stop that. At the time, they tweeted in Japanese, "The art in question will not be used or distributed any further beyond this date, except for being included in the art book. Mm-hmm. The collector's edition, we deeply apologize for this matter." Mm. Yeah, it's like, maybe you should just send them some money. Just say, like, sorry, here's a donation to your group.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably solve some issues, but mostly they're taking some minor complaints.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them says we opened up to further criticism by right-wing people and all around mm-hmm. the world. Congratulations, Ubisoft, you've punked yourself.
Yep.
Yeah, there's that. But we got some union news. I think all this is union news, essentially, though. I'll just go with this one. I'll move this up because that one's not union news. But we had some bad news here that the Humble Games staff has been entirely laid off.
Yep.
By Ziff Davis, not by IGN. Mm-mm. IGN does not own any of this. They are essentially one of the groups under Ziff Davis. Essentially, there's Humble Games, a publisher, and then IGN Entertainment, the corporation that owns IGN, and then Humble Bundle, which, you know, the people doing all the writing and videos and all that, they have no control over any of that. That's all corporate mm-hmm. part of IGN managing things, but all this stuff is owned by Ziff Davis, and it seems like Ziff Davis just did not like the financials of this publisher. Mm-hmm. Publishing a lot of small indie games, some of which do well, some of which don't do well. But in the end, they're like, why should we do this anymore? And laid off 36 people. And yeah, they put out a statement saying something like, in these challenging economic times, for indie game publishing, Humble Games has made a difficult but necessary decision to restructure our operations. And I believe people put this whole statement through an AI detector.
Mm.
And it said this was definitely made in AI. Mm. So, you know, they try to say, like, we're just restructuring. There's no issues here. You know, it sucks to lose these people, but we'll be okay. And from what former employee said here, Ziff Davis is trying to spread the idea that it's restructuring to save face, but that's mm-hmm. a lie. No one from Humble Games survived the layoffs, or will they have anything to do with game launches moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Also on LinkedIn here, the Humble Games creative lead Chris Radley, who left in 2022, added this: operations have been handed off to a third-party consultancy. No staff are left. Do not believe this tailored message written by the parent company of Humble Games, Ziff Davis. We're trying to mitigate pushback. This is once again a failure of leadership across the board, and once again, hardworking, talented staff are paying the cost for their poor decisions. Every ex-employee is being gaslit by this narrative, and it's so disrespectful. So essentially, they're shuttling all the decision-making obligations of a publisher off to this consultancy company and allowing them to deal with these developers who've suddenly lost any sort of accessible representation for them, especially one, at least one that's just launched a game in the past week or two. I'm trying to see which game it was. Not seeing it. Yeah, Bo Path of the Teal Lotus.
Mm-hmm.
Launched on July 18th, about a week ago. And they're like, oh, we no longer have publisher supports. So I've seen some indie devs on Twitter being like, hey, these guys are suffering from this really shitty situation. Mm-hmm. Please check out their cool game.
Yeah.
you know, trying to help spread the word to their communities. Trying to say, hey, check out this game. Support these guys because they're in a very shitty situation. And much like a bunch of the other games that they have coming out here, like Neverlong 2, Wizard of Legend 2, On Your Tail is coming out sometime in the near future. Yeah, a good handful of games here that whose developers are kind of just in the lurch now. Like Coral Island was a Kickstarter game that was working on a Switch version that now they've been like, we don't know what's going to happen with that because we've suddenly lost publisher support at this point, and basically offering some explanations for what's going on for their backers and all that. And it's like, yeah, this is a really shitty situation to put these people in. And it's all because Ziff Davis is Ziff Davis, a company that only cares about the bottom line on their financial sheets and do not care about the people that help them make all that money. Why they bought these companies, which seems like more like they didn't really give a damn about having a publisher under their ownership, and more the Humble Bundles side, which probably makes a decent amount of money. But yeah, Ziff Davis can suck one. There you go. There's your bad news for the week. In better news,
yeah,
video game voice actors from SAG-AFTRA are going on strike over AI protections they're seeking. This is not a industry-wide strike. This is mainly negotiations with Activision, Epic Games, and a bunch of other publishers and developers. I think Insomniac is part of that. Take-Two and a couple other other publishers. And sort of this came at the wake of San Diego Comic-Con happening. So the members of this union basically had permission to continue on with their panels and whatnot at San Diego Comic-Con, because that was just kind of too short notice to kind of tell them to not do anything for the trips they took and paid for and all that. So, but after that, any further work they do for that stuff is going to be scab work then.
Yep.
Running any of these games. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, the main SAG-AFTRA people had their strike end, but now it's the roughly 2,600 voice actors and motion capture artists across this industry that are going to be striking until they hopefully get a better deal. They've even got people like Tim Sweeney saying they need this kind of protection, which that's a sign of a company's fucking up, is when Tim Sweeney's against you. There you go. So yeah, hopefully they get the deal they're looking for. But yeah, we'll see how that stuff goes. But let's get to some good union news. Mainly that it seems like two Blizzard unions have been formed. One with the over 500 people that work on World of Warcraft. That unit is called the World of Warcraft Game Makers Guild. It comprises the entire World of Warcraft development team, including designers, engineers, artists, quality assurance, testers, and more. The other is a 60-person unit of Blizzard QA testers called Texas Blizzard QA United, CWA. These are all under the Communication Workers of America. So that is great news.
Awesome.
Yeah, as they could unionize because Microsoft acquiring them included a... promise that they would not interfere with any potential unionization stuff. And so these groups have decided to take advantage of that to get unions formed.
Yeah.
That's great to see.
Suck it, Bobby Kotick.
Well, he got paid.
I know he got booted out. I know. But this is just the perfect way to piss on his legacy.
Yeah. And it's now is on Phil Spencer and crew to deal with. So we'll see how that stuff goes, because this doesn't prevent like Phil Spencer and them from trying to be tough negotiators or just refusing to do anything. But it's for the time being, they can at least form the unions and work on whatever deals they want to negotiate with Microsoft. But that's good. And in similar news, Bethesda Games Studios has formed a union. This is essentially the... This was the first major game studio union in this country. Because the World of Warcraft stuff was later this week. But the Bethesda Game Studios was, I believe, Monday. So yeah, that's the team behind, you know, the main Fallout games and Skyrim. Starfield, all that kind of stuff. They are the first major studio in the U.S. to unionize across all of its teams. So, that is great news.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. I want to see what... Yeah, they're with the CWA, I believe. So, much like the others. So, that is great.
Yeah, awesome. So, yeah, it's like we've said, labor is really, you know, it's labor's time right now. It's for a long time, you know, the momentum has been on the side of the companies. Now that the actual workers are getting organized, now it's like, you know, the momentum is on their side. So yeah. I'm glad that pattern is continuing.
Yeah. So yeah, that's great news. Hopefully there's no real fuckery on Microsoft's end, but we'll see how that goes. That's one of their specialties, is fuckery.
You know, that was, it's Microsoft, so there's like a good 50-50 that they could. So,
yeah,
don't be surprised.
Yeah, yeah. So that is a good note to end on for this week. And that'll do it for the show. So, yeah, thank you, Brandon, for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about, as we'll be in August.
Yep.
I think by next week, we'll be heading into the big indie disaster week, as a bunch of indie devs have decided they're all going to release their games this week.
Yep.
Because that has Pepper Grinder on PlayStation, Xbox, Volgar the Viking 2,
yep.
Creatures of Ava, Cat Quest 3, SteamWorld Heist 2, The Crush House. All coming out in the span of a week, and there's been even more announced for that since I put this list together. So, you know, if you're into indie games, that's going to be a rough week to get through. But that'll be fun to see. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out, and select strangers who are also excited at unionization happening at one of the biggest companies in the world.
Yeah. Well, two of the biggest companies in the world, because both, you know, Activision Blizzard and Bethesda are huge companies. So,
well, I'm considering them all under Microsoft.
Well, yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Yeah, somebody should look into that.
Oh, they tried.
Yeah, they tried. Oh, well.
But yeah. Yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.